Run the Rose City by doing the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health. The marathon and the half marathon both feature several crossings of Portland's iconic bridges, and both races have a downtown start and finish. Use code AMR20 for $20 off registration at portlandmarathon.com. Hey, stick around to the end of this episode to hear Liz and me on Miles of Books. Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I am joined in studio today by Molly Williams. Hello, Molly.
Well, hello, Sarah. It's so nice to see you.
It's lovely to see you, too. We did see each other on Monday night at Book Group.
We did. And yes. You've got your curly hair. You look so good from the hairdresser.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yes. And as usual, I did not read the book at Book Club.
Oh, yeah. It was Splendid in the Vial. It was a wonderful book.
Right. Eric Larson.
Yeah. All about Churchill.
Yes.
Which you will never know about now.
Hey, I watched The Crown.
Yeah. Well, and did you ever watch Churchill? It wasn't called Churchill. There was a movie about Churchill. Anyway, very, very good. You can watch that one.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay. But while I was there, also in our book group is your newer workout partner.
Yes, I get to work out mm-hmm. with Lise, and she'll get up in the morning and work out with me, which is so nice of her. Mm-hmm. Although she's starting to abandon me because I have to go at 6:30 and she's retired. She's like, I'm not going at 6:30, but she did meet me today. We had a kerfuffle. We had a kerfuffle this morning. So,
Between the two of us.
Yes. So what happened is that we were exposed to COVID on our book group.
Yes.
So Lise said that she wanted to know if we were still going to meet since we were exposed. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm still going to go. And she's like, well, I'm going to wear a mask. And she said she didn't want to do arms.
What?
Because I want to do an arm workout and she didn't want to do it. And I'm like, okay, well, it sounds to me like she wasn't going. Well, that's not what she meant. So then I had some things to do this morning and I ended up getting to the gym late. She's like, oh, but I'm here. And I'm like, oh, wait. Okay. So I finally get there and she's got her mask on and, you know, she doesn't care that I don't. And I start doing my arm workout and she starts doing it too. And she said, well, I told you I didn't want to do arms. I'm like, well, I didn't even think you were coming. So she ended up doing an arm workout that she didn't want to do. And I just totally missed all the signals. I'm like, well, I'm so sorry. I just didn't get any of this. But anyway, she was a good sport about it. But that was our kerfuffle. And then she made me do sit-ups, which I hate doing sit-ups. Do you like doing sit-ups?
I don't mind them.
What kind of sit-ups do you do?
I do just a modified curl. So I just, but I really think about, you know, putting my head and very upper body toward the ceiling rather than going toward my knees.
Okay.
So I don't curl so much as
lift.
Yeah.
And try to keep your lower back on the floor.
Definitely.
And do you do that for your back or?
I do because for my core. Yeah. Obviously, but yes, in the hopes that it helps my back and by strengthening my whole core, hopefully it helps my back.
Yeah. And it has. And then is that part of your PT exercises or just something
it is on? Yes, that's where I do it is part of my PT.
What else does she have you do for core?
Oh gosh, so many things.
I hate core.
I mean, sometimes it's just as simple as laying on the floor and really pushing my lower back into the floor and putting my hands in front of me kind of in a prayer position with my elbows very much out to the side. And for me, that's a big deal now that I can press my lower back into the floor without having to tilt my hips.
Interesting.
So I used to have to, you know, do like a little hip tilt to get my lower back to touch the floor or the mattress when I, if I'm trying to sleep on my back. And now the fact that I can just put my lower back onto the flat surface underneath me without doing a hip tilt, that's a big deal for me. I realize I sound like I've said, oh, wow, I took one step followed by another.
Well, but I'm curious, was it a flexibility thing or a strength thing?
I think it was just the dynamics of my body.
That's what I'm wondering. Like maybe you just have a little bit of an arch.
Yeah.
Did you find Pilates difficult with that imprinting stuff?
Yep, definitely. It was very challenging. Yeah,
I could never really. I think I have the same thing. I have a hard time getting my lower back down.
Definitely. Really and you know, when I worked with the trainer, that it was always like, okay, you know, they'd be like, okay, put your lower back down. And it was like, okay, give me a sec here. Because it wasn't just a like pressing the button and the sunroof opens. You know, I really had to struggle with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So I do I do kind of bird dog things and. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, your back's been so much better. I mean, everybody has flares of their issues. From
it
time
did.
Time.
Yes. So I had a flare over the weekend and I am hopeful that it doesn't feel like bulging discs. Mm-hmm. It just feels like really almost like part of my lower left back kind of froze and just needs to be loosened up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when I saw you on Monday night, I was in quite a bit of distress.
Yeah. See it in your eyes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that was Monday. We're recording Wednesday. Tuesday was a rough day for me. I felt kind of nauseated the whole day thinking like, is this the bulging discs again? And then woke up a whole lot during the night, this past night, and realized in the middle of the night, I can go see my PT Amy. And it was, it was a real light bulb moment. And it was so silly because yesterday I even looked up to see if I could find an appointment for a massage. And then I'm like, I'll just see Amy. Amy does amazing massage and she can tell me what's going on and she can give me exercises for it. Boom, one-stop shopping.
But you're better even before you've seen Amy.
Oh my
gosh. Just the thought that you can see her has relieved some of your back pain.
You have a smile on your face when you say that.
No, it's true. There's a big mental part of back pain.
Oh
yeah.
100%. I
know. And they haven't, figured it all out, but yeah, there seems to be.
100%. And yesterday I said out loud a couple of times to myself, stay optimistic, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and it definitely did not have to be catastrophizing it.
Yeah.
And All right, Mal. Well, we're not talking about strength training in today's workout or my back. We are talking about perseverance and one woman's long-term quest to qualify for the Boston Marathon. Sheila Jen Carelli is a pharmacist, mom of two 20-something sons, a dedicated runner, and avid pickleball player. Sheila has been chasing a Boston qualifying marathon finish since at least 2010. We'll get the backstory on that. And in 2010, that was when Sheila and I trained together for the Portland Marathon. Sheila turns 58 this year and has to run a 4:05 or faster marathon to make it to that starting line in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Thanks so much for joining us, Sheila.
Thanks for having me. This is very exciting for me.
Good, good. Well, so in full disclosure, I should let listeners know that you, Molly, and me are friends, mm-hmm. but that's not going to stop us from asking you probing questions.
Just like we're running together.
That's right. Well, you forgot to mention that Sheila is a cutie patootie too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they can hear that in her voice.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. She is adorable.
Yeah.
So
Molly,
you are. So Sheila, tell us about your athletic background.
Oh, well, it's funny. I've been thinking about my childhood. My mom died recently. And so I've been reflecting a lot on growing up as one of nine kids and my mom's influence on my running and love for sports in general. But, as a kid, we were always outside playing and running around. There wasn't room for all of us in the house. So it didn't matter what the weather was. We were outside running around and we used to play kickball and this game called Red Rover. Were you?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You remember that? Mm-hmm. Where you had to run as fast as you can to cut through the other team's chain. Human chain.
Yeah. Reproducing game. Yes.
That was my earliest speed work.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And my mom also was a big tennis player. And as a, as a teenager, I watched her play tennis. So I started to play tennis with my mom in grammar school and then played in high school as a tennis player. And they used to make us run and I hated it. I just wanted to play tennis. But then through college, I found that running really helped me settle so I could study. And so I really used it as a tool to get through pharmacy school. And I just continued running. And especially when my kids were little, I found also connection with neighbors. I just continued to run and just found so much joy in being able to be healthy and also have friends to connect with and get to know and have that time together. So it really just became such an integral part of my life as I got older.
Mm-hmm. And so the Boston Marathon, when did that seed sprout for you and why Boston?
Well, you know, I lived in Boston when I was in my 20s after pharmacy school for a few years where I met my husband. And, you know, again, I was running then just casually and I didn't race till I was in my 40s, I think, maybe late 30s. But
really? Was that
when
late?
I was in my, when I was in my 20s in Boston, I remember being on the sidelines on Boylston and watching all the runners come in. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I didn't know anything about running races at that point in my life. And I just remember standing there in awe, like, how do they do that? Like, oh my God.
You were running at that point, but you were.
I was running, but I was like, you know, once around the Charles, 5 miles was like, you know, my nothing more than that, yeah. 3 to 5 miles. And it was, again, it was sort of just like to keep my life balanced. I wasn't anything more than that. And I used to go to the gym and work out too, but not like, yeah, I just like 26 miles. Oh my God. And what, you know, and to watch the end of the race. And I remember there was a German woman that won it that year and I saw her come in and I was just like, I don't know. It just blew my mind. And, And then, you know, years later, I remember doing a half marathon. I was living up in Vermont and I was like, wow, I just ran 13 miles. I remember standing in the driveway after the race telling my neighbor, I was like, I just ran 13 miles. Oh my God. It was just like such a feat. And then after that, a few years later, I ran a full marathon and I didn't think of the BQ at all, but I came pretty close and I was like, oh, people were talking about it after the race. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know anything really about qualifying for Boston.
How old were you then?
I was probably in my early 40s.
Okay, early 40s. So that's the first, like, that's the second little inkling, like, oh, there's this thing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then we moved out to Portland, and that's when I met Sarah. Mm-hmm. And I ran two times. Sarah, I think we ran the first one we ran together. That was 2010, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, I ran it in 2011 too. And then when I ran with Sarah, yeah.
So that 2010, training for that 2010 Portland Marathon, that was the first time you were specifically aiming to qualify for Boston. Is that right?
Probably, yeah. I mean, and maybe that was because you and I talked about it and you were trying for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we ran some of our long runs together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe 14-year goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
Soft,
and I was running
goal.
Like one a year pretty consistently up until COVID. I mean, my last one was right before COVID. Mm-hmm. So I had to take a little break. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to hear the story of the 2010 Portland Marathon from your perspective, because I see our fates really diverging when you stopped around mile 7 at a porta potty and I kept going because I had missed qualifying for Boston before by stopping to pee in a porta potty in the marathon that I PR'd in. And so I vowed that I was going to pee in my capris if the need to pee hit, and it did around mile 17. So I did. Lucky for me, it was raining super hard. So it was like, you know, going through a car wash almost. But what do you see as, because spoiler alert, I ended up qualifying by 59 seconds. And in my mind, you missed by about 2 minutes. So about the time it probably, spent in that porta potty. So we all see memory differently. So what's your memory of that 2010 marathon?
Yeah. I remember it was raining. It was really rainy, right?
Very hard.
And we were soaked. Yeah. And I, you know, it's funny. I've continued to struggle with having to pee when I run long distances. And I'm sure other people may have this issue as well. And I didn't really think about it as we started, but I knew early on, like, I wasn't going to make it without going to the bathroom to pee. Mm-hmm. And the idea of peeing in my pants, I was just like, what? I knew, and you were gone and I was in the porta potty. So I know you've talked about it before, and it's just this last time I've really just said, well, I'm going to have to pee. And so I have to plan for that, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't remember being super disappointed in that race about not qualifying. I think it was only my second marathon. And I wasn't like totally set on qualifying. You know, I think when you start marathon running, you just don't know what's possible, right? Even right. as an experienced runner, you sometimes don't really know. There's a lot of variables. So I think I just didn't really feel like I had a choice. Like I had to go in and go, and whatever happened, happened. So, it was early on in the race. I think there was still a lot of possibility. I didn't really feel like, mm-hmm. I didn't think at the time, like this is going to, you know, make the BQ mm-hmm. impossible, you know?
Right. You had a lot of time, theoretically.
So what about now? Are you going to pee in your pants?
No.
No, you're not going to do it, huh?
No.
What if it's raining and nobody can tell?
I don't know. Warm pee running down my leg.
Do it.
Have you done it, Molly?
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I am the stealth peer everywhere I go. Oh. When I hike, I wear a hiking skirt so I can pee standing up.
Oh my goodness.
I know. I don't have underwear on and like nobody can tell. So I just like hike and I like,
I mean,
go.
If you're,
don't take my backpack off. It's awesome. Everything dries.
Maybe I just need to try it. I just think about it too much.
Also, like in the run, like it's going to dry so fast. Nobody's going to notice.
And it's also, my thinking is it's not as if you are doing it your first pee of the morning. So it's urine that's been sitting there all night with lots of acid in it.
It's very watery.
But she might be dehydrated and it might be a little bit stronger. But pee's sterile.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Well, it'll all dry. You won't even know. You know what the
Let's
sweat.
Let's go on a run together. You guys can show me the way.
Now you're like, I'm not running with you guys. And if I do, I'm staying out in front.
Yeah, precisely. But
yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
that's a sweat mark, I'm sure. Right? Yeah. But now, if you have to do number two, then I don't see an alternative than using the facilities.
Yeah, let's make that clear. We will not poop in our pants on purpose.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose. But reason you choose black for your bottom half.
No white shorts.
No white shorts.
I saw a woman yesterday running in white shorts and a cream color tank top. And I was like, wow, that is great.
You are trusting that IUD that things are not going to get going. Good for you, honey. It looks great.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Okay, so what's the next marathon, Sheila, that you tried to qualify for?
Oh, after that?
Mm-hmm.
I ran New York. Mm.
But nobody qualifies. People do. But that's a hard one to qualify, right? Because it's really crowded.
Yeah.
You were feeling aggressive?
It was hard. I had two friends, my dear friends from Vermont, Elsie and Kate, that were running with me. Not mm-hmm. with me. They were faster than me. But we went together. And, you know, I was inspired by their speed and just trying to mm-hmm. do what I could to, you know, have my best race. It's a tough race. There's a lot of, you know, you got to go up and over all the bridges. It's very crowded the whole way. But it's also very exhilarating race to run. I came pretty close. Central Park was the last stretch in Central Park. It was very hard for me. But yeah, so I missed it. So what started to happen was I was running pretty consistently 4-hour marathons. I think my first marathon, I was 3:50 something, but then I started running right around 4, but always seeming to miss it just by a little bit. And even if I wasn't trying, I would find out later, like, oh, I ran a Vermont City Marathon and man, my watch didn't work properly and I didn't know what my time was. And that seemed to happen a couple of times. Like I couldn't get my GPS to start or, you know, the battery went dead or something happened. I pushed the wrong button and didn't really know exactly where I was as far as time, you know, because you're always off a little bit when you cross over the start. So the clocks on the course aren't always accurate or consistent with your pace or your time.
Sure.
Yeah. And so what happened was, you know, even I wasn't trying to get a BQ, I would finish and then realize I just missed it like by seconds. Right. So I feel like I started to want it more and more as I kept missing it without even like trying. I was like, wow.
So you weren't really trying in New York.
Yeah.
And what'd you miss it by?
I don't remember. I think it was like within a minute.
Oh,
and then the
my
same
gosh.
Thing happened in Vermont. Like I was so close.
That's
in Vermont,
pee.
I really wanted it. Yeah. Vermont, I really wanted it. And that was the one I remember my watch was off and that I was like, oh man, when I finished and a friend of mine, my running friend, Carrie here, texted me and she's like, oh, you know, you were so close. And I was like, so close? Like what? Like I didn't even know.
Did you think you had
it? No, I just didn't really think about it. Like it wasn't like that. Sometimes when you finish, you just like, I'm just so glad it's over. Mm-hmm. But I remember looking at my phone when I got it and she was like, you were so close. And then I looked at my official time and I was like, oh my God, you know, 20 seconds off.
Mm-hmm. Christmas.
You know, and then it was like, oh, if I was only 20 seconds off, I know I could do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I think I just heard a collective groan of everyone listening to this podcast.
Had your watch been working, you could have sprinted in and got those 20 seconds.
Right? Yeah.
It seems like they should give it to you for that.
Yeah. Well, and of course, then there's the whole, well, you got a BQ time, but was it fast enough to get you into the race?
I know, that's a bunch of baloney.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and then, I was like, you know, the BQ is like just this man-made time, you know?
It is.
Yeah, get so stuck on it.
But you are stuck on it because here you go.
I know. Right.
You haven't given up.
Right. It's that goal that keeps me going.
But to me, your focus hasn't always exclusively been the Boston Marathon, that you're an avid trail runner. You've done a few ultra marathons. And so talk about that side of your running personality.
Yeah, I mean, I like having the marathon as a challenge, but it isn't always fun, as anyone who's run one knows. Mm-hmm. But it's good to throw in the mix. And I do love trail running. And we're fortunate enough to live here in Portland and have this beautiful forest park to run in. And I know I started running in there when I first moved here. And just like, it's just my happy place. I go in there and I just love it so much. I ran in there on Sunday, and as you both know, we have had four glorious days in Portland recently, and Sunday was just spectacular. And it was just like, I don't know, I just lose myself in there. And I've always said, like, trail running, I call it my active meditation. Even before, I meditate a lot now, but even before I was meditating, there was just something about being in there and just this sense of quiet and peace, and I don't know, you don't have to worry about traffic, and there's just trees everywhere, and I don't know, I just, and there's no pressure, like I don't care what my pace is. Mm-hmm. And you can just go, like I love running on this Wildwood trail, it's marked, so you just go as long as you want, turn around, come back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I love that. And I have only done one ultra marathon, and it was 50K and along the Mackenzie River here in Oregon. And it was the same thing. Like I kind of went into it, like, I am so excited to be able to do this race along this beautiful trail in the woods. And I'll just go whatever pace I want and see what happens and stop when I want. And yeah. And it was really an absolutely lovely experience. And I was like the slowest runner in the first half. And cause I kept stopping and, looking at the river and talking to people. And then I was able to pass a lot of people in the second half because
you'd gone out so conservatively.
I know where to go, but faster. But yeah, so I like having the balance of that. And I also have places I can go even near my house, like Mount Tabor, which is a park near me that you both know of that has trails. And so I feel really fortunate to have easy access to trail running, and it does allow me to come back to the roads and appreciate them more too. I think having a variety of places to run and different goals really keeps me appreciating all of it. You know, I don't get bored with running that much, or, you know, I just like the variety. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing now? Trail runs or road runs or a combination?
Yeah, so it's only been a couple weeks since my last marathon. So now I was out on Sunday and it felt really good to be on the trail. So I'm hoping to like get one trail run in during the week, but still try to stay engaged. I always think about being half marathon ready. So that's sort of like where I like to live. Maybe, you know, trying to do a longer run on the weekend, 8 to 10 miles, and maybe
and
I want to get a little
road.
Yeah, sometimes on the trail. I think trail running for me, because it's very hilly, is sort of a way to build strength too. And I think that's important, especially if you want to qualify for Boston, you got to, for me at least, I got to run faster. So I got to do hills. And like this morning, I just went out and did a few, you know, quarter mile pickups to try to just get a little faster.
Great. Just 20 seconds faster.
Yeah, 20 seconds, all I need. Yeah, so that's my goal now, is just to find a little bit of a challenge in those everyday runs.
Great. Well, speaking of quick, it's time for us to take a quick break to hear from some supporting sponsors. Sheila will share more of her quest when we return. Stick around. Thanks to Portland Marathon for its continued support of our show. Come out to my fair city, Portland, the Rose City, to take part in the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health. It offers both a marathon and half marathon happening this year on Sunday, October 6. Training for and running the 2010 Portland Marathon was what forged my friendship with our guest, Sheila. Then the following year, it was my co-host Molly's debut marathon. With new ownership since then, the races have changed for better in so many ways, including all new courses since we ran the event. The courses for both the full and the half marathon are fast, beautiful, and a fantastic way to experience the Rose City. Since the city is bisected by the Willamette River, both the full and the half marathon have numerous bridge crossings, yet the maximum course elevation is a mere 178 feet. The downtown start and finish area for both courses is only 36 feet above sea level. Like the favorable elevation, Portland weather works in the participants' favor. Historical temperature averages for race day are a low of 50 and a high of 67 degrees. Historical chance of precipitation on race day is roughly 25%, although that's typically very early in the season for us to get wet weather here. Like Sheila, Molly, and I have done, come chase your 26.2 or 13.1 dreams here in Portland on Sunday, October 6. Join us in the Rose City. Register today at portlandmarathon.com and use code AMR20 for $20 off registration. Again, register today at portlandmarathon.com and use code AMR20 for $20 off registration. portlandmarathon.com, that code AMR20 for $20 off.
So Sheila, it sounds like you're being kind of casual about your training for this marathon. Are you working with a coach now, or have you ever worked with a coach for your marathon pursuits?
Yeah. You know, when I ran Napa in 2020, I decided that I was interested in having a coach, and one of my good friends suggested somebody, and I had just a fabulous experience with Bridget, and she lives in California. So we weren't together in town, you know, running together, but she coached me from afar, and it was just really fantastic. And I learned so much and had never had that experience before. And she just is so positive and brings so much joy to the whole training and getting stronger, and just also being able to navigate all the challenges of life while marathon training. So it was really fantastic. And I ran Napa again off by less than a minute. And I just Bridget actually was at the marathon. I just remember seeing her face at the end of the race. Just like, oh, I missed it. But I ran really fast, like faster than I had in several years. I cut off like 5 minutes off of my previous times. Yeah, I ran a 3:55 and change. And I needed under 3:55 to qualify. It was, so again, disappointing. But I just adored the whole process of having a coach and someone to cheer me on and help me push myself, you know, doing that speed work stuff. I had not done that before, any kind of track work like that to that degree. So so that was a great experience. And that race was March 1st, 2020. So after that, we weren't doing much racing because of COVID. So, but yeah, that really gave me a new perspective. And then last year I asked Sarah, about coaching, and she suggested one of the Train Like a Mother coaches, Jen. So I did work with her as well. I ran a CIM in Sacramento, and that was also a fantastic experience. Jen being a very experienced coach, triathlete, and really, really valuable. And I, again, learned so much. I think as a triathlete, she came at, you know, it was a somewhat of a different approach, which I liked because it was more of a variety of workouts, and it was fantastic. And I also felt like I was able to gain a lot of running knowledge from her, which I appreciated.
Are you using a coach for your next marathon attempt?
I probably won't. I feel like I learned so much from them that you know, what happened with, okay, so I ran two marathons in the last 6 months. I ran CIM, and then it didn't go the way I wanted. And so then I ran Napa again a couple of weeks ago. And so with Jen, I trained really hard. I was like, I felt like I was in tip-top shape halfway through. My quads were killing me, and I struggled the whole way to the end. I had my head down the whole way. I just was like, I'm gonna do this. Like, I wanted it so bad, and I was so serious about it. And I just cried when I came over the finish line because it was so off from what I had hoped for, you know? And it was just so disappointing. And so then I said I wanted to keep training because I love the process. Like, it was so much fun training. I really didn't want to stop training. So it was like I put so much emphasis on the race that I wanted to just put the emphasis on the training, you know, and bring a lot more joy to the process instead of the focus being just that number at the end of the day, that time. Yeah. So when I decided, okay, I'm going to do this again, I'm going to run Napa and see if I can get that BQ again, I worked with Bridget again, and we talked a lot about sort of the mental game and the idea that I loved the process, right? And how I had to let go a little bit of that BQ. Like, I'm holding on too tight to that number, to that finishing time. And if it really is about loving the process, then I need to embrace that piece of it and maybe have the race be more of a reflection of that. And so when I got to the start of the last one in Napa, I said to myself, and Bridget and I had talked a lot about this, like, I'm going to show up. And if I can do a BQ, I can do a BQ. But plan B is I start running and it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. And I'm okay with that. And instead, I'm going to look around and I'm going to thank every single person I see, all those volunteers along the way. I'm going to smile at the people running next to me. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to stop if I feel like it. I never stopped before in a marathon other than to go pee. you know, and I'm going to smile the whole way. And that's what I did. And it was a totally different experience. I was very slow, but I didn't care. I did care. It's not that I didn't care. I just accepted what it was. For what it was. And I also kept my head up and realized that, and this is what Bridget said, it really resonated with me. We run as individuals, but we race as a community. And I felt that so much that day. Like, this is my community of running people. We're out here struggling together. We're also out here enjoying this together, right? And it was really beautiful. I mean, if you look at all the race pictures of me, I have a big smile on my face. It was still very, very hard, even stopping to walk as much as I did.
And that's the race where your quads got sore?
No, that was the previous one. That was the one in December.
And then this one, Sacramento?
Yeah, in California International.
Okay,
yeah.
And now this Napa one, you just had a different attitude and went into it.
And it was just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Sheila, I mean, the difference between when, you know, we see each other on a weekly, if not several times a week basis because of pickleball, and that the difference in your attitude when you got home from Sacramento versus Napa was just so significant. I mean, I didn't get any sense that you were disappointed from Napa. And I didn't ask you a ton of details about it, but I'll admit that I looked up your time and I was like, wow, Sheila let's be honest, you missed qualifying by a lot. And mm-hmm. and you had told me that you end up mixing walking. And so I figured you had pretty much, you know, changed your goal, pivoted during the race. But there was, you did not come home like a defeated warrior at all. You seemed really upbeat, and you talked only about positive experiences that you had during that race, like people you talked to and that gentleman you ran with part of the way and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when we first started talking today, I was talking about connections and how meaningful that is to me. And this race, I ran with a gentleman for probably half the race, older guy that, you know, he just said, run with me. This is my pace. I'm going to stop every 30 minutes for a minute. And I was like, okay, you know, and as we're running past these beautiful vineyards, mm-hmm. We just connected, you know, and it was so pleasant to just have that, you know, conversation and to be out there together. And yeah, it was really nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I came home after not meeting my expectation at CIM, and I cried. I cried at the finish. I cried for days after. And I thought to myself, mm-hmm. you know what? I love running. Why am I letting this bring me down? You know, like, I don't want that to be my experience, even though, you know, it was disappointing. But, and I think too, like I meditate a lot too. And mm-hmm. I did go on a meditation retreat during this most recent marathon training. And one of the things that comes up a lot in learning about meditation is that we suffer because we have expectations, right? We're disappointed when we have expectations about things. And so just this idea of accepting things as they are, you know, it's like, okay, this is where I'm at, you know? And I think as runners, sometimes we're always comparing ourselves to our former running selves. You know, I used to be able to do this, mm-hmm. and we get disappointed when we can't. So it's like, you know, how do you meet yourself where you're at? And that's how I felt this most recent race. I was like, okay, I was a few miles in. I'm like, this is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be here. And I'm going to be here with all these other people out here, instead of having my head down and, you know, being somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yet you still have the goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can keep trying. It just was like, okay.
So is it a soft goal now?
I think it's a soft goal. I mean, it was also my 10th marathon, which, you know, is,
that's,
you know,
great.
That's significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, okay, well, I run 10 marathons. I should be proud of that. And also I thought to myself, you know what? I've pretty much qualified for Boston. I'm going to just accept that I was close enough, mm-hmm. but I still have it in me to run more. Not right now, but maybe.
Yeah. What are you, I don't even know what you're going to run to try to qualify. Is it Portland?
I don't think you've chosen another marathon.
No.
Your next marathon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. Nope.
Oh, you haven't. Somehow I thought you had a race coming up.
Well, it was I think Molly.
She just ran Napa.
Yeah.
Quite get the memo. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the last we talked, I was asking you about what races
you
would recommend.
Yeah.
But I had decided on Napa, which has already come
right,
and gone.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you'd run Vernonia, it was an easier race. But you haven't picked any easy races to qualify. Like, that's what you do.
Oh,
right.
I mean, Napa
would have
is
been
Napa
a good
an easier
one?
One?
Yeah.
Well, what about
yeah.
like one of these downhill races?
That's what Napa was.
Oh,
yeah.
But, well, you drank too much wine along the way. Do you drink wine in Napa? Do they have wine?
Some people do.
Do they have wine stops?
No.
They do not.
The end.
This isn't France, Molly. Yeah. So talking about community, let's take a little bit of a tangent here. So you and I haven't run together very often since 2010. Your best running friend is a gal named Carrie, who you've mentioned. And then in my mind, you have a secret weapon of sorts in your ultramarathoning neighbor, Larry. So tell us a bit about what you gained from running with each of them.
Oh my goodness. I am so lucky to have my running friends, and I include you both in that community too, even though it hasn't been recently. But yeah, so Carrie and I met when our kids were little in the neighborhood. We were keeping score when the kids were playing little league baseball, but we started running together, and gosh, it's been so long now. And you know, I think that having running friends is so important, as I know you've talked about many times before here. And Carrie and I run every week. It's probably been 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much joy in having a friend, just having someone side by side, shoulder to shoulder, mm-hmm. listening, someone you can talk to, whatever's going on in your life. That's what comes up that day. You know, it's like, I don't know. I just feel like it's such a special time to be with someone when you're running side by side.
And you can give them the long form.
Yeah.
You got nothing but time.
Exactly.
Wait, let me go back and tell you some more details. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like it just comes out, right? It just flows. And I love mm-hmm. that about having a running friend, especially a consistent friend that you know, like we run every Friday at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And we push each other too. You know, just that consistency, but also she came down to Napa. We ran, she ran the half and I ran the full. And, you know, it was really fun to have that experience together too. And we've run other races together in Portland, which is always fun, you know, just like what race are we going to do? And mm-hmm. pushing ourselves in that way. Yeah. And it's just great. She's awesome. And I love having the companionship. And And Larry lives down the street. They're both in my neighborhood, but Larry I've been running with since I moved here. And if you're a trail runner, you may know Larry because he's a legend and he is amazing. And he always, you think about Larry is he's the kind of runner that helps you know that there's so much possibility, I think, in running, like things you think you can't do, you can do. Mm-hmm. And there's always another challenge.
Because Larry, tell people Larry's close to 70, right?
Wow.
Larry's 67 now, and he runs probably 6 ultra marathons a year. He's got the world record now for 100 mile on the track and wow. 200K. He's going to Australia. He won age group for at the Boston Marathon last year. He's going to this World Masters. Oh, he's got so many accolades. He's incredible. He's absolutely incredible mm-hmm. runner, consistent, strong, you know, he's getting faster as he gets older. But wow. the possibility is amazing. And the thing about Larry, and now he retired and him and I have been running once a week and he pushes me like I run faster when I'm with him because he's mm-hmm. faster mm-hmm. than me. My husband says, mm-hmm. he saw us running once. He's like, I saw you chasing Larry. Yes, I can't keep up with him. So I was like running behind him, like to try to get to his side. But yeah, so it's just the two of them have been really amazing companions for me. And Larry's always teaching me about running and he embraces that idea of running community and connecting with people and seeing new places. And he was the one that showed me the trail running and how much fun that could be. And yeah, so it's been great having both of them in my life and I feel really fortunate and grateful for them.
Nice. Nice. Well, in the intro, I mentioned that you're an avid pickleball player, that you're one of my favorite pickleball partners in the whole wide world. And so, I know some people who listen to this podcast get a little tired of hearing, but let's talk about juggling a passion. For you, it happens to be pickleball. For somebody else, it might be something else. Talk about juggling that, you know, a sporty passion with your BQ pursuit, because there were times that you were like, hey, I can't play this weekend because, you know, I have a little niggling injury or, you know, before the taper or during the taper, you were like, I'm not playing this weekend. So,
yeah, that's a good question. I think that these two marathons I did, the first one and the second one, comparing those. So pickleball, I mean, Sarah, it's been so great playing pickleball consistently. Oh, I don't know. How long have we been doing it now? A year, 2 years?
At least a year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So a coach may tell you that, you know, doing a sport like tennis or pickleball where you're going side to side is not the best companion to marathon training because your risk of injury is higher. But in my head, I kept thinking to myself, well, I think it's good because, you know, you're balancing out your non-running muscles, right? That must be good somehow. I tried to convince myself. But, you know, when I trained for the CIM, I really was so focused on doing the right things. And Jen was like, okay, you can play, but you know, you need to like really make your training your priority for the marathon. And so I was a little more careful about not playing on certain days. And so it was hard for me though, cause I love it so much. And it was hard to say, no, I can't play cause I got to run, or because I have, mm-hmm. you know, a long run the next day. And I did do that quite a bit. And I think if you don't play consistently, your risk of injury is much higher. And so this second training for the marathon for Napa, I was like, I'm going to keep playing because I love it. And I want to, you know, again, I had that different kind of attitude. Like mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, be happy.
Yeah.
And so I did keep playing. I didn't miss, if you hadn't noticed, Sarah, but I didn't really miss many of our pickleball dates. I just tried to keep playing through it and be, you know, careful about not chasing the ball down every single time.
And even before, when I had more details, I organized a Tuesday morning women's pickleball league that you're a part of. And that when I asked people at the start of the session, the 6 week session, if, you know, what days they wouldn't be there, you said you were going to take off the Tuesday before your marathon. And then when it came time for it, you're like, well, I'm going to play tomorrow if you still haven't filled the spot. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I filled the spot. But then, so you definitely, so that joie de vivre with which you approach Napa Valley Marathon really came through, in that you're like, hey, it's the Tuesday before my marathon and I want to play pickleball.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will say that there, you know, there were definitely some Tuesdays that I would pick you up and you'd already run that morning when I, you know, would pick you up at 7:43.
I know.
To go to our 8 a.m. pickleball.
Yeah.
So how do you have the energy?
I don't know. Well, and the other thing,
in the dark,
yeah,
in the rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing awesome. Was I was running with Larry on Tuesday mornings. And that's the other thing about having mm-hmm. a running friend that I didn't mention that's so important is, you know, when you have a friend waiting for you outside, you're much more likely to go, you know? So when I tell Larry mm-hmm. the night before that I'm going to meet him at 6:30 to run, I'm going to get my butt out of bed and meet him at 6:30. You know, I'm not going to cancel mm-hmm. on him. And the same with Carrie, mm-hmm. like having a running friend helps with accountability. So, so that Absolutely. Does help. But the other thing too about training that I want to add is that I also, the other thing I've done more of is that, you know, I have Peloton now, and Sarah and I just mm-hmm. talked about this yesterday, is about mm-hmm. incorporating more core workouts. And I try to mm-hmm. do core or Pilates pretty consistently. And I think that's been very helpful with pickleball and with running because of the stronger core, I think, and stronger back, that mm-hmm. helps to prevent injuries. So I highly recommend Pilates and, you know, core workouts for listeners who are running and want to do multiple sports at the same time, mm-hmm. because that stability, I think, really helps a lot. I've noticed a big difference for myself by having that strength.
I was going to ask you if you were doing strength training or something to augment it. And that's so much more important as you get older too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's important for everybody. Yeah, but
the mobility piece of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are a little spring chicky, but when you do need to recover, how do you recover? And are you finding as you get older, you need to recover more or differently?
Yeah. You know, for me, recovering means moving. And I...
Oh, blah, 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 blah. I want to hear you laying on your back. Oh, my God.
Okay, well, so I
do. My pessimistic running partner, my optimistic running partner.
Yeah, Sarah, you need us both.
Right, exactly.
Hey, I'm not running, so don't listen to me. That's probably, you know, my problem. Too much time on my back.
Well, okay, so when I ran CIM in December, mm-hmm. I couldn't walk. My brother picked me up after and dropped me off at the hotel. I couldn't get out of the car. Somebody walking by had to pull me out of the car.
Stop
I went
it.
To my hotel room and I was on the ground trying to stretch. I couldn't get back up. I couldn't stand up. I was in so much pain. Mm. Honestly, like I was so much pain, but I did go in the hot tub at my brother's house, which was great. and tried to walk the next day, but it was, I couldn't, upstairs. Oh my God. It was awful. So in that experience, it was just, you know, I could barely move. So recovering, you know, I think it depends on your experience and, you know, how your body's feeling, and you have to listen to your body and do what you can. I say moving because for me, I feel like if you can move.
So do you walk? Do you do Pilates?
Yeah. I mean, walking.
Spin.
But I think spinning.
And you brought a foam, you brought a foam roller to Napa.
I did bring the foam roller to Napa, and that helped. But here's the thing about Napa. I was not sore at all. So CIM, I pushed through it. It was super hard. I never, you know, I didn't stop. My quads were crushed. But then CIM, the totally different experience where I walked some of it and took me a lot longer. And the next day I was fine.
No, Napa Valley.
I'm sorry, Napa Valley. I was fine.
Yeah.
I had no soreness by the day after. That's why Sarah, the day after, I wanted to play pickleball. I got, I mean, the race was Sunday and Tuesday. I was like, I want to play pickleball. Let's go. Because I had no soreness at all. But
yeah,
so I think it really depends on how your body's feeling. But I, you know, like for me, it's just walking.
Walking is what you do. Okay.
Flush it out.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So this is maybe a delicate question, but, and you've talked some about that some of your missed Boston qualifying attempts were because of equipment malfunctions. You haven't talked, said that you thought maybe your shoes added to the what happened in California International Marathon. You wore those fancy racing shoes. But do you think there's something inside of you that holds you back a little? Because I have always, always considered you the far superior, faster runner than me, yet somehow I've BQ'd, you know, I said I, you know, did it 2010 and then I did one more time since then. But yet I still think, well, Sheila's the way faster runner. And, you know, that's certainly true today. There's no way I could keep up with you in a race. But like, I don't know. Do you ever like think like, oh, I really need to figure out how to keep my nose to the grindstone in a race without it also translating to keeping my head down? Or something like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
and I don't mean to disparage you because I think the world of you.
Yeah,
know that. No. I hope you know
yeah,
that.
I appreciate that. Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about this idea of me for so many years struggling with being late. So we were joking about this before we started about Sarah and I have been playing pickleball together. And for a while, the place we were playing was closer to Sarah's house. So I was driving, picking her up. And for me to pick up Sarah, I need to be on time. And that was really challenging for me. So I would really try hard to get to her house on time. But I would arrive like on time. Like if I'm supposed to be there at 12:45, I am pulling up at 12:45, maybe a few seconds after 12:45, but on my clock, it still says 12:45, right? Okay, I'm getting to the point here. But now Sarah picks me up because we play to a place closer to my house. She's always a little bit earlier waiting for me as I'm like gathering my things, running out the door. And I think historically, I've been late for things. It's really hard for me to be on time. And I did this at work for years. I was always late to my meetings. I continue to do it. So I don't, I'm still struggling with this idea of being on time. And so finishing my races a little bit late, I'm arriving at the finishing line a little bit late every time. Seems to be very consistent with this pattern of being late in other places in my life. And so I've been curious lately about like, maybe if I could just...
It's on brand out, for
very
you.
Very consistent with being late. So maybe if there's a way I can find to find myself to be like Sarah a few minutes early to other things in my life, it may come easier for me to show up a little bit before... I hope at the finish line, you know, maybe I can, I can kind of make this a consistent pattern in my life. And it'll pay off in my running too. So that's what I'm thinking about now is. Mm-hmm.
I think that's genius. Yeah. I really think I sincerely think you're onto something. Because I also want to say, that when we ran in 2010, and we live, Molly and I live 6 blocks from each other. So, we would always say, we'll each leave our house at 6:30. We meet midway. You and I live about 2 miles apart from each other. So, there's more variability in that. Mm-hmm. So, it's not all just about, well, Sheila's always late, but so if you were running to my house, you'd be 3 to 5 minutes late. And by most people's standards, if you're 3 minutes late meeting your friend outside a movie theater or, at a restaurant, that's not a big deal. But when you're out there at 6 a.m., 3 minutes makes a difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that said, that's the history. So for you to, when you would be 25 seconds late picking me up to go to pickleball, I mean, that's a vast improvement, right? It's like chipping away at your Boston qualifying time, I'm 5 minutes, my goal, I need to shave 5 minutes off my time. Well, now I've shaved 3 minutes off my time, so I only do 2 minutes. So you are making progress in the being on time goal.
Thank you,
Sheila. So I have faith. And the thing is, I mean, like I said in the intro, you're 58, and sometimes I think, wow, for like just a random generic 58-year-old, I'm like, wow, to still be going after those big goals. But I just look at you and I'm like, well, it's Sheila. Of course she is. Like, and of course Sheila's not slowing down and all that stuff. So
thanks.
So I know that it's out there for you.
I think you can do it, Sheila.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you haven't done it because I'm like Sarah, like she's such a good runner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for believing in me. You too. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, it's very easy. So, and I know now people listening to this are rooting for you as well.
Yeah.
So yeah. So
what is next for you and your marathons?
Well, my next goal I've decided is to focus on some shorter races. So I have a half marathon training plan from Hal Higdon, which I've done a lot of his in the past. I have them all printed out in a folder, and I pulled out one, which is a half marathon one where he has you do a 5K race, and a few weeks later you do 10K and then a 15K, which these 10-mile races have become more popular, and then your half marathon. And I thought, you know what? This would be a kind of a fun thing to do, and I don't need to do it as far as like the 16-week or 12-week plan, but just kind of like find a 5K and a 10K and a 10-mile race and see what I can do. And so that's what I'm thinking about doing. And then once I get through that, maybe then I'll be ready to do another marathon if I feel like, okay, building a little bit more confidence as far as the getting myself more comfortable going faster, at those shorter distances.
And getting to that finish line ahead of time.
Yeah. Being on time.
Being on time. Yeah.
Or early. Early.
Yeah,
you could start your timer like a little early and then you'd be like, then you're always like, trying to catch up.
I can see it. I'm going to pull up in front of your house next Tuesday at 7:43. And there you're going to be standing outside waiting for me.
I almost was out this week.
You were very fast. I didn't even have time to open Duolingo and do like one little lesson. Oh, goodness. Well, Sheila, you've been just so wonderful. And thank you so much for sharing of yourself in this. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
Really fun. Really, really fun.
Learn how to pee in your pants.
All right. I'll work on that. Yep.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Just love her to pieces.
She's fantastic. Yeah. She's going to do it. I know she's going to do it.
Yeah. And I have to say that, everybody kind of weaves in and out of people's lives. I mean, you've definitely been a constant in my life. But, Sheila and I hadn't lost touch, I would say. But we really kind of rarely saw each other for a number of years, in part because of the pandemic. But I'm so grateful that pickleball has brought us back together.
Are you running with her at all?
I am not, mainly because she's faster than I am.
I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, right.
But you do have pickleball. That's
yes,
nice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we have a new hot pink sleeveless tee in our store, and it is just $20. It is, wait for it, Molly, price to move.
Show off the guns.
Yeah.
Or weightlifting guns.
Yeah. Ugh. Your weightlifting guns. That's right. That's right. Yes, it is.
You have to shave your armpits. So. Well, no, you don't, but could.
You do
could.
Whatever you want.
You could do that.
Yeah. So it's hot pink. It is a technical fabric. It is a nice breezy weight. And it says another mother runner in pale pink, this really fabulous dark purple color and yellow. They look fabulous together. It has some little kicky shoes on it. So again, that hot pink sleeveless tee is brand new in the store. It's just $20. Hustle on over to anothermotherrunner.com. Click on store and you can click on running tops drop down, or you can just peruse the entire store at anothermotherrunner.com.
I love that color for spring.
It is nice. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you wear it in a race, then your family and friends and spectators can spot you.
Yeah.
Yes. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Madure from Fire on the Bluff. Dr. Molly can pick you up and put you on the bed if you want. Mama's not going to do that because Mama's back might get upset. Put him on the bed, please. Thanks. Augie, hold on. Hold on. Augie, go. Oh, it's going to be really hard for him to jump. Go let her help you.
All in the front. The Frenchie's
kind of. All in the front.
All right.
Oh my God. The Dolly Parton of dogs.
Yep. That's a good way to put it.
Thanks for staying with us. This is Miles of Books, our monthly bonus segment. It's a quick conversation with Liz Waterstrat, a coach in our Train Like a Mother Club and one of my occasional co-hosts. Hello to you, Liz.
Hi, Sarah.
So I am intrigued by the book you chose this month because it seems more of a narrative than the advice-driven tomes that you typically pick, those nonfiction books that you read and talk about. So lay it on us.
You're correct. I did go down the route of a memoir. I would call this a memoir. Mm-hmm. And I do like a good memoir. And I've read a lot of businessy books lately. And so I just had to go in a completely different direction, still keep it nonfiction. So this is real. This is not a made up story.
Let's be clear what nonfiction means.
Although it is a good story. And this is a book that I found when I was purchasing some books on a particular large scale website. This book was recommended on there and I went for it and it really paid off.
Wow. Okay. With no further ado, please share the title and the author with us.
The title of this month's book is called Wander, a memoir of letting go and walking 2,000 miles to a meaningful life. And the author is Ryan Benz.
Hmm. Okay. So it's about him hiking the Appalachian Trail.
It is. So a little backstory. Ryan was living the American dream, you might call it. He was in his early 30s. He had a wife. They worked a lot. They had this beautiful home. And he just kept feeling like something wasn't there. He wasn't living his purpose. And he ultimately divorced with his wife. And he just felt like he needed to find out what life was all about, what he was all about. And so he set out on the Appalachian Trail. Mm-hmm. And the book follows him from day one of that journey all the way to the finish.
Mm. All right. Okay. So we know how long the trail is. It's longer than 2,000 miles. But how long is the book, Liz? Because that's, you know, that's ultimately what really matters to you.
Well, the book is about 215 pages. Mm-hmm. I read it in less than a weekend. It's an easy read, easily digestible. It's written almost in a diary format where it's almost, I don't want to say day by day, but the different segments of the trail. And it's just very, very natural, a very organic book. There isn't an overarching story that he keeps, you know, some books, some memoirs, they bounce around from the present to the past. Mm-hmm. And he does that a little in the beginning. And I find it confusing when authors do that. I don't know about you. I find it hard enough to wake up and know what day of my own life I'm in. And so when I read a book, I don't want to do a heavy lift and have to figure out, well, which decade of their life are we in? So he does a little bit of recollection like that, but it just, it's very much in real time as it's happening. And mm-hmm. it really, the way he writes, it just takes you along on that journey with him.
That's good, because you had sent me a review to it and someone said that it was a little too, these are my words, not theirs, a little too pedantic in its diary, like that this reviewer wished there was kind of a larger overarching theme and that it seemed a little bit too much. Wake up, eat, hike, go to sleep, wake up, eat, hike, you know, that type of thing.
Well, I read that review as well. And you know, I would say that the book really sticks to the title, which is Wander. And maybe there doesn't always need to be some big aha moment. More of life is just this tiny unraveling of these little moments and staying present and experiencing it. And the journey is more important than the destination or some big storyline. So to me, it flowed very well. Is it the best piece of literature I've ever read? Of course not. That would be a very high expectation to put on this. But it did win an award. And I had to look up what the award was. It won a Royal, I think it's called a Royal Dragonfly Award. And I thought, you know, because sometimes you see those awards and you're like, what does this actually mean? But it's a real award that goes to up-and-coming writers. And I would say it was well-earned, well-deserved here.
That's very nice. Very nice. Okay, so I guess he talks often of H-Y-O-H, and I don't know if we're pronounced that hi-o, but like, you know, the way, what is it, laugh out loud every day, you know, lowly, that type of thing, or YOLO, whatever.
Yes. I love this acronym, this H-Y-O-H, which stands for Hike Your Own Hike. And he talked about some of the different people he met on the trail, and some are clearly in it to win it. Like they want to set a fastest known time, or they have a certain timeline they have to stick to. He did not have a timeline. It was going to take him as long as it took him. And so he realized early on that to make the most out of this adventure, he needed to take it at his own pace. And to me, I felt like this was a takeaway for all of the athletes I work with. Race your own race, run your own run. You know, we can so get caught up in the goals of other people, the expectations we feel from other people. And this was just a reminder to stay in your moment and your experience.
I like that. I like that. And also, I understand that he really emphasizes the importance of getting outside in nature.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's something that we probably all feel like. We live lives inside. I mean, everything we need is inside of our house. And so there's not a big draw to get outside. And I don't know that we all necessarily need to go hike the Pacific Crest Trail or the Ice Age Trail. I think it's just a reminder that, you know, looking for little snippets of time in our everyday that we can get outside. And maybe for a run, we choose a trail. Of course, we go with a friend. Maybe we go for a walk in a forest preserve with our kids, but just getting that dose of nature that I think it helps us stay connected to the bigger picture and, you know, all of life, and, you know, fills us with that sense of awe and gratitude and connection.
I just took my dog on a walk right before we recorded this.
Aggie.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I'll just go stand on my back porch and look at nature. So whether right now it's the new leaves that are coming out, or, you know, kind of the sliver of a moon that's up, I need to be outside a lot. Like when I think of prison, I just get incredibly short of breath.
Wow. Okay. On that note. No, I understand that. I think it was it E.O. Wilson? He talked about biophilia, how we have we just have this running inside of us, this need for nature, this need for the natural world. And I think the more we ignore that, the more unsettled we feel. So yeah, and it can be so simple, just looking out your back window, you know, appreciating, like you said, appreciating the buds as they're blooming on the trees.
Yeah. All right. So I know from, you know, hearing stories about people hiking the Appalachian Trail that they have trail names. So mm-hmm. what was Ryan Benz's trail name?
His name was Scrambler for his ability to scramble across rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that I told you, I warned you that I would be asking you if you had a trail name, what would it be, Sarah?
So I gave this some thought and I tried to come up with something clever, but I just kept coming back to my athletic nickname, which is Champy.
And Champy.
Yes, yeah, Champy. And my husband gave me that nickname early on in our dating life, and it just really stuck.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So, and it's even a couple of people on the pickleball court will call me Champy, people in the Another Brother Runner community. I kind of know they've been around a long time if they throw out the Champy call. So it feels very special to me in a silly sort of way. So how about you, Liz? What would be your trail name?
Well, I'm also going to go with something that my husband gave me. Mm. I think it was probably 20 years ago. We were out riding our bikes in the San Diego area and running on trails. And he called me the mosquito because he couldn't get rid of me. And I mean that in a sense of he couldn't drop me. Like he couldn't accelerate. I was always like right there on his wheel or right there with him. Uh-huh. And so he just kept calling me the mosquito. So
I like
it. Term of endearment there.
I like it. How often does he throw out the mosquito call to you now?
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while because we don't do as much riding and running together. I'm sure he has other names now.
Because Jack probably at least 50% of the time calls me Champy, just in general daily life. And so for a while there, when he shifted to occasionally calling me Sarah, I was like, oh, what have I done wrong?
Whoa.
Yeah, when you hear your full name, it's always trouble around here for me.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And did he just kind of take off from his regular life? That's pretty privileged, right?
Of course, yes. I mean, you come from a place of privilege, and he acknowledges that many times in the book.
Oh, good. Okay.
He left his job. He had the means and the time to do this. He was no longer married. He did not have children. Mm-hmm. But he was doing this for someone else. So he decided to dedicate his hike to an organization for cystic fibrosis. I believe the organization was called A Breathtaking Journey. And what was really neat is he was posting about his trip on, I saw some of it on Instagram and some on Facebook, and people who had cystic fibrosis were starting to follow him, and some of them actually met him along the trail. Yeah, I think, isn't that beautiful that someone dedicated, I mean, obviously you're very privileged and it's very selfish to have the time to go out there for months on end and just walk in the woods. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, if it means something to you, it's important. Mm-hmm. And he says early in the book that he didn't know he needed this story until he had lived it. And it's just beautiful that he dedicated it to someone else and it connected to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you said you saw it on Instagram. How recently was his through hike?
Oh, it was back in 2017. But if you go to his Instagram, which I did a little Instagram stalking. It's funny because I went to his Instagram after I read the book and it was neat to see some of the pictures of the milestones that he talked about in the book.
So did he hike from Maine to Georgia or Georgia to Maine?
He did Georgia to Maine.
Okay. All right. And do you ever daydream of doing such an epic adventure?
100% yes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. In fact, I have a friend who's out there right now doing it.
Really?
Yeah, I would love to do it. Now, do I want to spend months of my life on end? No, but I think it would be reasonable to go out there for a shorter period of time and hike different segments of it and just experience it. I've always wanted to experience it. Unlike you, I love hiking and camping. Love it.
For those who don't, I admitted that before in our back and forth emails about this episode. I am just not a backpacker or a camper.
It's okay.
I have an irrational fear of axe murderers campground. Oh yeah.
Not bears? Mm-hmm. Bears, lions, no, moose, axe nothing?
Specifically axe murderers.
Axe murderers. Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yes. And with my first husband, he would pay me $5 if ever I found a news article about an axe murderer attacking campers. I never was able to say, never got that $5.
How much did you earn?
Zero. Zip. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's
okay.
Mainly that I always have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I just don't like it. It sets my heart racing to have to get out of a tent. I find it very uncomfortable to sleep on the ground, even if I have some sort of mattress. I'm a creature of comfort.
It sounds like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we talked about before the episode, the name Sarah means princess in Hebrew. Enough said.
Oh, goodness. All right. Getting the train back on track here.
Yeah. 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 So Liz, if gals like this type of book, like you did, I know that you have some more recommendations for them beyond the obvious one that I thought of, which is Wild by my neighbor, Cheryl Strayed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also chose this book because I know that there's another mother runner hiking training program. And so I thought it might connect with that group.
Yeah.
And along the same lines, I would say North by Jenny and Scott Jurek is another tale of being out on the Appalachian Trail. But in this case, Scott ran it. And that's a great book. I really like another very well told story. And then similarly, there is The Pursuit of Endurance by, I believe it's Jennifer Farr Davis. And she, back in, I think, 2011, set the fastest known time for the trail. And that's a big deal. And the fact that she's a woman doing it was a big deal. I felt like that book was a little more rushed. It made me a little bit stressed because it was all about like pushing a certain time, which I know there's a time and a place for that. But I just feel like if you're going to be out there on the trail, it might be better to experience it, or at least that would be my thing. And then if you're looking for more of just I would say this book is more of a meditation, a deeper cut, we'll call it. This one is called Walking One Step at a Time by Erling Kagge. I think he's one of those Viking countries, you know, he might be Norwegian, but it's just a beautiful meditation on walking and slowing down and taking it one step at a time.
Okay. All right. And then there's certainly the Bill Bryson classic of Walk in the Woods.
Yes. Okay. My favorite moment in that book is when he's walking with, what was his friend's name? Do you remember?
I do not remember now.
Oh gosh. He had some like really, it's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, they're out walking and they're a few days into it or so. And the guy is so uncomfortable. He's just trying to like release weight from his backpack. And so maybe a day or two later, they're going to make coffee. And Bryson says to his friend, "Where are the coffee filters?" And the friend goes, "Oh, I got rid of those to let go of, to get rid of some weight in my backpack." It was just the ridiculousness of that. And also the frustration he felt, because it was like, "I just want my coffee. What do you mean let go of the filters?"
The so 1 ounce filters.
Yeah. That is a classic.
Uh-huh. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for mixing things up and bringing us a memoir. Really appreciate that.
Well, I have one more thing, Sarah, because we have been finishing this year every episode with a call to action.
Yes. Okay. Bring it on.
And I actually reached out to Ryan on Instagram.
Oh.
And I explained what we did here. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Would you be willing to give us a call to action?" And so he got back to me right away. And he said, yeah, he said, "If you gave yourself permission to let go and wander, I wonder what you might notice." And I just think that's a really powerful just reflection and contemplation, where if you just gave yourself permission in any space you have in the day to just wander, whatever that means to you, wandering, going for a walk, letting your brain wander, what might you find or what might you notice? So I will leave everyone with that.
All righty. Thank you. Such a cerebral ending to the episode.
Yes, I love it. I love an intellectual.
Thank you, Liz.